Good morning again, everybody. So we're going to continue discussing about the connection. And so this connection was a strange object we introduced with a funny transformation law that gamma prime was equal to J gamma plus J D prime J. Okay, and I'm just going to write it like this. I gave you the expressions with all the indices before, but I'll just write it schematically. And quite good when you're trying to prove some equations just to write them schematically first so you don't get confused by all the indices. And you can pretty much predict the structure of it, right? Because it has one up and two down indices. Remember the definition of J was dx prime dx, and J twiddle is the other is the inverse. So two down and one up means you've got two J twiddles and one J. And then we found that funny extra term, which was the derivative of J twiddle with respect to X prime. And we actually showed from the formula J twiddle equals one, if you differentiated that formula, you could show that this term here is also minus J twiddle DJ. Where's the duster? Sorry, where have I put the eraser? It's got lost now. Ah, I got there. Thank you. So this term is J twiddle DJ using. Okay. And so we proved those formulae last time. And then the point of this was that if we take the derivative of some vector, okay, and again I'll leave, yeah, go ahead. Ah, because I didn't put the indices in. Okay. So this is, of course, mu alpha beta is delta alpha beta. Okay, so it's schematic notation. So some of the indices are contracted and some are not, and I'm not going to bother writing them all out. I'll leave that to you. So, you know, if you want me to put the indices in, I can do it. But so schematically, okay? So I really want you to work through all of these yourself. I'm not going to do it for you, and to show that they work. So I'm just giving you the outline, and I want you to fill it in, because if you work everything out with all of the indices and everything, you'll convince yourselves you understand it. What we did was defining the if we take the derivative of a tensor, then here what I mean is d alpha v beta, for example. We discussed this is not a tensor. It doesn't transform properly, right? And the reason it doesn't transform properly is that d alpha prime v beta prime is not, if it was to be a tensor, this would just be dx, dx prime dx for the beta coefficient times dx dx prime for the alpha coefficient, right? So this would have transformed like a J for the upstairs index and a J twiddle for the downstairs index times dV. But that was not true. In fact, what we got for d prime v prime was just j twiddle d of jv. Remember the formula that d prime is j twiddle d with appropriate indices contracted, because this is d by dx prime, and so that's dx dx prime times d by dx. And you want me to put the indices in, I can. And so the left hand, so this is the transformed version of dv, d alpha v beta. D prime is just j twiddle d, so this d prime is just this term. And v prime is just jv, right? V is a vector with an upstairs index, so it just transforms like j. And so this is equal to j twiddle j dv plus j twiddle dj times v, because this derivative acts on the j, and that'll give the second term, or it acts on the v, which will give the first term. So this was the right term. This one is how a tensor should transform, and that was the wrong term, because that tensor should not have that quantity. So, but now we can use the fact that gamma prime v prime, using the formula for gamma prime, is of course j twiddle j twiddle gamma minus j twiddle dj jv. Okay, so the v prime is just jv. The gamma prime, I'm just using this formula up here. And now you can see what will happen is one of these j twiddle j will give 1. And so this term is just going to give that piece, j twiddle times gamma v. Sorry, it'll give the piece that goes with this. So it'll give j twiddle gamma v. And the other piece, j twiddle j will give 1. And so I get j twiddle djv. And so that will cancel, precisely cancel, the bad term. Okay, so the sum of them, just add these equations, you get d prime v prime plus gamma prime v prime equals j twiddle dv plus gamma v. So it transforms correctly as a tensor. Okay, so in doing this, I've used that form of the gamma transformation, right, to get the minus sign that canceled that bad term with a plus sign. And again, I've not put the indices in. I'm just leaving that to you. But when you do, you'll find out that this works. So likewise, if I took a derivative, so that's how to make what we call a covariant derivative. So we call this, we call the alpha v beta plus gamma, and I told you last time, always put the derivative index last on here, gamma delta v delta, v delta. We call this d alpha v beta, and that's the covariant derivative. There, always be last. Okay. We call that the covariant derivative, and covariant because it's a covariant index, like covariant vector. And that's a covariant derivative, and that's really a tensor. So what about how should we define d alpha v beta? Let's imagine I have a vector with a downstairs index. How do I take a derivative in such a way that the result is a tensor? And the answer, so d alpha v beta is defined to be d alpha v beta. And by the way, when I write d alpha, I think I've said this already, but it really means that. There's no prime on it, so it's d by dx alpha. D alpha v beta is this ordinary derivative. Now we've got to put the connection in, because this will also have a similar problem. This will not be a tensor, because when I transform the v, I'm going to get a dx prime, a dx dx prime, and then I'll differentiate it. So it'll have some bad term. We've got to cancel that bad term, and we cancel it with a gamma again, but this time with a minus sign. So again, put the derivative index last. I have my v. I've got to contract v with a lowered index. Got to contract it with something. The only thing I can contract it with is the upper index there. And so this must be beta. OK, so that's the covariant derivative on a covariant vector. And just to see why that will work, you see this. So if I work out dv prime everything minus gamma prime, this v prime, so d prime, I can use that formula, j twiddle d. V prime is a covariant vector transforms with J twiddle. So J twiddle V. And then we'll have minus gamma prime. Now, gamma prime is all that stuff. J twiddle, J twiddle, gamma plus J D prime, J twiddle. And now I'm actually going to use the first form of the equation, the first form of the transformation of gamma prime. Okay, because before I used the second form, use the first form, and that's multiplied by v, v prime, which is, of course, j twiddle v. And then what we'll see is you see here I've got J twiddle D, which is, of course, D prime. And so this is going to give J twiddle DV, differentiating the V. But I'm also going to get a plus D prime J twiddle. And the point will be now, D prime J twiddle V. This bad term here, the j twiddle will give 1, and I'll get d prime j twiddle v. So this cancels that because of the minus sign. And what I get is these j twiddle plus the j twiddle will be 1. And so I'll get minus gamma v. OK, so that transforms correctly. So again, I suggest you work through all that and put all the indices in the right place and check that it works. More generally, we can see how to differentiate a tensor with an arbitrary number of indices. So let's say I've got d alpha of some tensor, beta, gamma, with some number of downstairs and some number of upstairs indices. And so that's going to be d alpha of the tensor. Okay, and so what's it going to be? Anybody guess?
Plus and minus, so.
Exactly. Plus gamma for every upstairs index, minus gamma for every downstairs index. Okay, because all that really goes wrong with the tensor transformation law is the derivative of that dx prime dx, which comes with every upstairs index, or the derivative of the dx dx prime, which comes with every downstairs index. And since when you differentiate, you just differentiate a product, you get a sum of terms differentiating each of those transformations once. You just have to cancel each one of them by adding in the appropriate gamma. And so what I do for the upstairs indices, I, again, derivative index always last. So when I deal with these upstairs index, that now becomes a delta contracted with here, put a gamma there. Okay, so this is plus dot dot. This is for each upper index. And then we have a minus gamma derivative beta psi t psi. Gamma plus dot dot or minus dot dot dot, and this term here is for each downstairs, each lower index. Okay, so that's the general definition of a covariant derivative on any tensor, and it is a tensor just because these terms are precisely designed to cancel the bad transformation properties of this term. Okay, are there any questions about covariant derivatives?
Do we insert delta to a place where the indices are all to the beginning of the line?
Sorry, say that again?
We have this like contraction of gamma or gamma delta alpha with t, t in upper indices. Do we insert delta to the first place of the line or to the place from which the index is taken?
Oh, I see what you mean. Precisely from the place where the index is. So you should think of, you see, what goes wrong with this formula in the tensor transformation is that you have a dx prime dx for this upper index. And then you differentiate it, and it gives you this bad second derivative of the x prime with respect to x. You want to cancel that. So just keep exactly this index in place, replace it with a delta, and then contract it with the gamma delta. So if there was a, let me just do another example, maybe beta gamma xi d eta, and so this would be d eta beta gamma xi, and then we would have plus for the upstairs gamma delta eta t delta beta xi plus gamma psi delta eta t beta gamma delta. Okay, and then minus one for the lower. Gamma eta beta psi t psi gamma. I shouldn't have used psi, should I? Let's use that delta psi. Okay, so that's got three indices, and the two upper ones come with a plus, and the two lower ones with a minus. Okay, so these contractions go like this, and like this. By the way, I should just mention, if I have some tensor, let's imagine I write it like this, okay, with some up and some down indices. You can raise and lower these indices with the metric, okay, but they remain in place horizontally, okay. So when you write something like this, this is a little bit ambiguous. If I wrote t beta gamma xi, it doesn't really mean anything. Okay, I should really be careful that the order of the indices is horizontally is obvious. Okay, because that order does matter. You can raise and lower things, but then you can also change the indices horizontally. So I should have really spread this out a little bit.
Why does it matter?
When you raise it, it'll go to that place.
It goes to that place. The order really matters. So you see, let's take our Christoffel symbol. Okay, now let's apply the metric to this guy. Where am I supposed to put that index alpha? Okay, so what you'll find, and we'll do this in a moment, is that we actually define a Christoffel symbol with lowered indices to look like this. And that's to tell you that this guy is actually came from the upper.
Right, yeah. So does it matter where you put it on the lower scale as long
Absolutely.
As you know which one it is?
Well, you need to know.
Okay, so all you need is to know. So
you need to know.
If you're not raising and lowering them, then you can keep them directly above.
Yeah. It's dangerous. Let's put it that way. So when we work out the Riemann tensor, typically this is defined like this, or the other way around. And we usually write it like this, because we really care about the order in this direction. Okay? And so that's why you'll always see the Riemann tensor. Well, if it has some raised indices, you don't put them there, because then you wouldn't know where they should go. So just be careful to spread your indices out so you know where they are horizontally as well as vertically. Okay, so I told you about something called a compatibility condition. And which is not emphasized often, but actually it's the key to the consistency of these equations. And so you will find this whenever people discuss what are called fiber bundles. This is a type of fiber bundle. And the key check you have to perform that the introduction of a connection is consistent is the check that if I have three coordinate systems, okay, and they overlap, so this is the triple overlap region, you have to check that in the triple overlap region, if I went from x to x prime and then to x double prime, that would be the same as going from x to x double prime. You have to check that the connection, the transformed connection, will agree in those two ways of computing it. So let's call going from x to x prime is j. That's dx, dx prime dx is j. From x prime to x double prime, let's call that k. And from x to x double prime, we'll call that l. I seem to have colored chalk today. So just to write that out, j is dx prime dx. Okay, again, I'll leave off the indices and leave you to put them in. K is dx double prime dx prime. And L is dx double prime dx. So the first thing you can check is that KJ is equal to L. So if I, you see, this is the quantity that will act on every tensor index. And if I act on the tensor index with a J first, and then I act with a K, I should get the L, because the L is just going directly from X to X double prime. And that's actually clear, because J is this guy, K is this guy. When I contract these two indices, so I'll put the indices in here, mu, you can see that the X prime gets contracted. And so just by the chain rule, this is dx double prime dx, which is indeed L. Okay. So at least that works. But what we really have to check is that we wish to show that the very top equation over there, gamma prime equals j gamma plus j d prime j twiddle. Okay. We wish to show that that and gamma double prime, which is k twiddle, gamma prime plus k d double prime k twiddle. Okay, so this is the transformation taking me from x to x prime. This takes me from x prime to x double prime. And we wish to show that these two equations together imply gamma double prime equals L gamma plus L d double prime L twiddle. Because then it will be true that whether we go via x prime to x double prime or go there directly, we get the same result. So how do we prove that? Well, obviously, we just substitute. Let's call that 1, 2, and 3. So let us just substitute. Oops, I don't want that one. Thank you. So how do we prove that? We just substitute 1 into 2. So we get gamma double prime is equal to k, k twiddle, j twiddle, j twiddle, gamma plus j d prime j twiddle plus k twiddle. And now we can use the fact that kj is L. Okay, so kj is L, kj twiddle will be L twiddle. So this first term is looking good. That comes from there, gamma, which is the correct formula. And then from over here, we get, now we've got to use the following formula, that k twiddle d prime equals d double prime. Okay, let's see, why is that true? Because k twiddle, what is k twiddle? Well, k is dx double prime dx prime, so k twiddle is dx prime dx double prime, and that times d prime is just d double prime. Okay, so here I've got my k twiddle with a d prime. I'm going to get a d double prime, so I get L k twiddle. Kj will give me L, then I get k twiddle d double prime j twiddle. So that came from this term. And you see, I converted the d prime to d double prime because this is a d double prime, and I want to combine those two terms. The last term, you've got to be a little clever, and what you do is insert here j twiddle equals 1. And the reason for doing that is that kj will give you L. So the kj will give you L. So you get L. And then j twiddle d double prime k twiddle. Then you notice that these two terms are just L d double prime of k twiddle j twiddle. And what is k twiddle j twiddle? But it's just L twiddle. Okay? And so what I have is L twiddle gamma plus L d double prime L twiddle. And that's exactly 3. Okay, so leave you to check all the indices, but that's how it works. Yeah.
Could you explain the second row, second term again?
Say again?
Second row, second term.
This one?
Yes.
You mean how I derived it?
Yeah.
Okay, so what I used is this formula here, that I want to convert this d prime derivative to d double prime, because I essentially want to combine these terms. So I noticed that d prime derivative multiplied by k twiddle is actually d double prime because of this formula, right? So d by dx alpha double prime is d dx double prime alpha x prime beta d by dx prime beta, right? So this is k twiddle. So k twiddle converts a d prime into a d double prime. So this k twiddle acts on the d prime. Again, I didn't write the indices out, but take my word for it, it does. And I would leave it to you to check all the indices. So it's a big, messy calculation, okay? But the beautiful thing, and that's what Riemann discovered, is that this transformation law of the connection, which he defined, satisfies the compatibility condition. And therefore, all coordinate systems, when they overlap, are consistent. And as I said, when you study fiber bundles more generally, it turns out this condition is really the critical one in whether the introduction of a connection is a consistent thing to do.
A question. Are there connections which do not satisfy this condition automatically?
If there are not, then you have to worry.
Yeah, I mean, because of the topology of the manifold or something like that.
Then it's simply inconsistent.
Okay, so this definition holds always.
If it doesn't hold, then your derivative is not covariant under coordinate transformations, meaning when I change coordinates, it will not agree. The whole point of this is to introduce a derivative which is somehow valid in every coordinate system whenever they overlap. And if this compatibility condition is not satisfied, there's no reason that these things are consistent. There's no consistency. So compatibility, you could just say, is a basic consistency condition which any connection has to satisfy, regardless of topology and whatever. Really has to satisfy this condition. Otherwise, you haven't got a consistent.
So what are the problems about defining spin connections, for example? Because there are certain rules you have to satisfy that you can define it.
They will also have to satisfy these.
But there can arise other problems.
Yes, they can.
Okay.
Yeah, they can. So it might be that you find you tried to make this connection and it just doesn't work. It might be it's impossible to introduce a connection. And when that's true, you cannot define spinner fields. Some manifolds, for example, it's impossible to define a spinner, like a fermion. Just can't exist, or a chiral fermion.
And this is done because of the topology or the structure?
It's essentially because of the topological structure that you can't. If you tried to introduce a connection, you'd find an inconsistency.
But the Levi-Civita connection you can define on all manifolds?
As far as I know, I don't think there's no obstruction to putting a connection on it. I don't know of any reason why you cannot define this connection. In fact, we'll see there is a unique connection. I'm just going to do that now. So if I give you a manifold with a metric, then under certain assumptions, there is a unique connection, and so you just explicitly construct it. And it's one which will satisfy these conditions.
Question?
Yeah.
About this covariant derivative, it's like the derivative, the covariant derivative is equivalent to the partial derivative if I am in the flat space because all the connection will be zero.
Exactly.
So in curved space, it's like because the derivative is always referred to like how this vector is changing at
exactly.
a certain point. So is it still like valid in the curved manifold that this covariant derivative tells me how this vector for bonus are changing?
It's a very good question, and the answer is yes. And we'll do that in a moment. So in a curved space, I can draw a little picture for you. Which is that, so this covariant derivative is used to what's called parallel transport a vector. So if I have a vector in flat space, when I transport it parallel to itself, we know what that means. You just take the vector and move it along, keep the direction parallel. In a curved space, not so obvious. What do you mean? So let's take a sphere, and we'll consider the equator, and put a vector on some point on the equator. Now I want to transport this vector around the space. So I could go to the North Pole, okay? And I think I just keep it parallel. So at the North Pole, it would be pointing into the board, right? So this means.
Do you mean parallel to itself?
Parallel to itself.
Okay.
That's parallel transport. You've got to transport it parallel to itself. Okay, that's one definition of parallel. That's the only definition of parallel transport. Okay. However, I could also transport it another way. Okay, you see, I could carry this vector parallel to itself to this point. And then it would be pointing in that direction, right, on the equator. And now I parallel transport it up to the North Pole, and it's pointing like that. Okay, so parallel transport on a curved manifold does not, depends on the path. Okay, and it turns out that the measure of the deflection of the vector as you parallel transport it is directly determined by the Riemann curvature. That's one way to define the Riemann curvature. Riemann curvature is what causes vectors to disagree when they're parallel transported on different paths. But what we mathematically, to define this parallel transport, we will use the covariant derivative. Yeah.
Are we going to define parallel transport on geodesics only? Because I think the story is like...
No.
Because I think you can define it on something else than geodesics, but the...
That's right.
The vector will behave in a more weird
way. We're going to do it. Just be patient. We should do this all, so you can ask all these questions in a moment. But they're very good questions. Okay, so let me, I think I mentioned this last time. We have this connection, which is a bit strange. Doesn't transform as a tensor. It has this second derivative term, which is funny, but it cannot be a tensor because its role in life is to cancel a bad transformation property, right? So it had to be not a tensor. But I already mentioned that the anti-symmetric part of this guy is a tensor, right? And we can see that from the transformation law up there. The last term would be something like J D D prime J twiddle. So that's really D by DX prime alpha D by D2 X prime beta of X gamma gamma delta. Okay, that term. And the point is that this is symmetric under alpha and beta. So the bad term is symmetric just because partial derivatives commute. So when you take the anti-symmetric piece of gamma, then so gamma prime beta gamma is equal to j, j, j twiddle gamma prime anti-symmetrized. Okay, so that's a tensor. The anti-symmetric part is a tensor. And that, by definition, is called the torsion, T mu nu alpha. And that's the torsion tensor. So in many books, you will find people just say the torsion is zero, just as an assumption. But it seems kind of crazy to construct this fundamental theory of gravity and then just make arbitrary assumptions. So it really is an arbitrary assumption that the torsion is zero. And I'm just going to leave it in there. We can perfectly well do all the calculations leaving the torsion there. And for the moment, I'm not going to make any assumption. So then there's the following theorem. covariant derivative of the metric equals zero. See, the metric is a tensor, and it's the most fundamental tensor of all, so it's very natural to ask what is its covariant derivative. And its covariant derivative is another tensor, okay? Because it's got three tensor indices. And in fact, this is a tensor. People don't usually give it a name, but so this is a tensor. And it's really the metricity. And so recent work here at Perimeter by Friedel and Smolin and so on actually questions this assumption and says, well, let's just take this to be a tensor. What could it be? And surely if we're physicists, we should be measuring this tensor and trying to see what's its value in the world. Okay? And so I like that approach very much. And I'm going to just leave it to you to think about. If you want to think about something through this course, I want you to come up with a theory in which this is predicted. Okay, so some kind of Lagrangian, some kinds of equations of motion, which actually yield this quantity as in a definite way. Okay, as far as I know, nobody has ever done that. And so, you know, you're welcome to try. And it is an interesting problem. The torsion, people have done this. So for the torsion, people study, for example, in supergravity. It's a more, if you like, constrained theory than Einstein's theory of gravity. You introduce supersymmetry and a whole lot of extra symmetries which constrain the theory. In supergravity, you can calculate the torsion. It's one of the equations of motion of the theory, fixes the torsion. And it turns out the torsion is not zero. It's proportional to the spin density. Basically, if you have particles which are left-handed or right-handed, you can ask what is the number of left-handed particles minus the number of right-handed particles, and that's the spin density. And the torsion turns out to be proportional to that. It's a very small number, and so very hard to measure experimentally, but in principle it should be there. So exercise. Think about a theory in which the metricity would be dynamically determined. Conventional assumption is just to say, let's assume this is zero. And, you know, it's not completely ridiculous. If you measure the length of some vector, and if you parallel transport a vector using this covariant derivative along some curve, this assumption means that it's that the length, essentially, that the length measured with this metric will not change. That's roughly speaking what this assumption means. So it's not a crazy assumption, but it doesn't have to be true either. Anyway, it's normally just taken as assumption. And if you make this assumption, then the symmetric part of the Christoffel symbol, alpha, beta, gamma, okay, so that's the part that is not the torsion. Torsion is the anti-symmetric part. So the symmetric part is uniquely determined. And this is probably one of the most important formulae in Riemannian geometry. And if you ever work in GR, you will memorize this formula. Okay. So whichever way you prefer to do it, that's fine. But it is a formula you actually should try to remember, because it's very, very powerful. So this is sometimes also called this funny symbol, the Christoffel symbol. So here's the answer to your question. Does any manifold allow a consistent connection? And the answer is, yes, it does, up to the torsion. You can actually put any torsion you like on the manifold. And then the anti-symmetric part of the connection is just the torsion you put there. Okay, so that's obviously determined. But the symmetric part is uniquely determined this way. So let's prove that. The proof is not difficult. So the proof is just to calculate things. D alpha G beta gamma minus gamma delta beta alpha G delta gamma. So now I'm just using the formula for the covariant derivative, two downstairs indices. So there must be two gammas with minus signs. Okay, so that's the first version. And then, surprisingly, it's sometimes often useful, when proving identities, to simply write the same formula down again and cycle the indices. Okay, so let's cycle alpha, beta, gamma. So move beta to the front. So it becomes d beta g gamma alpha. And then I cycle beta alpha a gamma again, gamma beta. I'll just write down the answer, check it's correct. And then we'll cycle it again. And then we do the following. We construct d alpha g beta gamma plus d beta g gamma alpha minus d gamma g alpha delta. No. Alpha beta. So basically, I take this formula. Let's call that 1, 2, and 3. So let's take formula 1 plus 2 minus 3. Okay, so those are the first three terms I get. And then I get the following, minus gamma. Now I'm going to do that trick of I'm going to lower the index on the gamma, but just be remember where that index goes. So the raised index goes to the first place, and I put the dot in there just to remind. So I just added these equations, so I must get zero. And let's see where all these terms came from. So this was just gamma beta alpha, so that term went to here. Gamma alpha beta came from... Sorry, it's been a while since I looked at this. Let's see. Why did I put a minus there? So let's see. Do you agree with this formula? I can't quite see it at the moment. That was the gamma beta alpha term. Where did this one come from? They must have come from here, right? But plus two.
It's correct. You can look at the last term in B.
Last term in
the first term in B and B.
Yes.
You lower gamma beta, so we have beta alpha gamma, so it's plus. So beta dot alpha gamma has to be plus.
This one here? Okay.
So this is correct.
Oh, it is correct. Okay, fine. I'm just worried about the sign of this guy. Yeah, go ahead. Yes. That's the definition, right? So G mu nu gamma nu alpha beta is defined to be gamma nu alpha beta. So it just lets you keep track of where it came from.
It should be a plus in the first.
Should be a plus here?
Yes.
Well, then in that case, this one I think will be a minus. let me see. Yeah, I think it should be a plus two because it comes from here, right? So this, where are we? This one came from here. This one went to here. Okay. And then let's look at the other ones. This one has beta dot something or other. So that's this one, right? This one is here. This one is here. And remember, I added this equation with a minus sign. So that explains the plus sign here. And similarly for the other term. Okay, so I believe this is correct. But that's great, because you see this is just the torsion. This is torsion beta gamma alpha. And this is the torsion alpha gamma beta. Okay, so, and this is just the symmetric part of gamma. This is twice gamma beta alpha, or alpha beta. So gamma alpha beta. Right? Yeah.
Shouldn't you have two on the torsion as well?
Sorry?
Factor two on the torsion as well.
Ah, thanks. Great, so we've solved the problem. So we have gamma, and now let me, I'll write it with lowered indices. Gamma alpha, gamma beta gamma equals 1/2 d gamma g alpha beta plus d beta g alpha gamma minus d alpha g gamma beta plus 1/2 torsion gamma beta alpha plus t beta gamma alpha. And so now we found the symmetric part of gamma, but we already know the antisymmetric.
Without the half and the torsion.
Is that right? How did we define the torsion? Torsion was a half, wasn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, with that.
Oh, you have twos.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Gamma, I have twos. Correct. So that's great, because now we have the symmetric part of gamma, and we know the antisymmetric part is just the torsion by definition of the torsion. The connection is just the sum of the symmetric piece and the antisymmetric piece. So that means that gamma alpha dot gamma beta is equal to 1/2 d gamma g alpha beta plus d beta g alpha gamma minus d alpha g gamma beta plus t gamma dot beta alpha plus t beta dot gamma alpha plus t alpha dot gamma beta, right? Because I just added the symmetric and antisymmetric parts of the connection. And so this quantity here, constructed from the torsion, is actually called the contortion tensor. I think that was a joke. And because of the contortions you need to do to derive it. And if the torsion is zero, so that's the solution for gamma. Now, if the torsion is set equal to zero, then we can take the first term only, and then we get this familiar formula. I've introduced some notation without. Well, let me write it out. D gamma. Did I write commas? I did write commas, and I didn't define them, so you should have stopped me. Sorry about that. So what this means here, g beta gamma comma delta, means d by dx delta of g beta gamma. Okay, so this is a notation for partial derivatives, that if I have comma delta, it means derivative with respect to delta.
One question. Then the symmetric part of the connection is only the Christoffel symbol if there is no torsion, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So the symmetric part of the, this is exactly valid always. Okay, but if the contortion tensor vanishes, then...
Does vanishing of contortion mean vanishing of torsion?
No.
So
I don't think so.
Why do you say that if torsion is...
Just because then I don't need to worry about anything. So yes, there are distinct conditions. But a special case is if the torsion is at zero, then the contortion is zero, and then gamma is the normal is the Christoffel symbol. Get those indices right. That should be an alpha. Or I could have just written that down. Okay, so all I've done is I took this equation and I raised the alpha back up to get this equation.
Question?
Yep.
For this equation that you have just covered.
Right.
In this part or in the lower one?
Okay. This one?
Yeah. This connection is symmetric in the two indices, beta and gamma.
No, this is just the symmetric part of the connection.
Yeah, it's symmetric.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if I relabel gamma and beta on the right hand side. For the first term, it's okay, but the second term is not okay. So
it looks. No, this is symmetrized on beta and gamma. I just flipped beta and gamma. That's symmetric. I just took this term and I replaced beta with gamma and gamma with beta, so it's symmetric. The definition of symmetrization. Just move, commute the two indices. Okay.
So you're saying that the second term is symmetric?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So how do I symmetrize something? I take the term and I just exchange the indices. So I get this term. And if I do that to this term, I get that term. So commuting the indices takes this term to that one and this to that, so it's symmetric. And likewise up here, you see G is symmetric under gamma beta. G by definition was symmetric. And then I think in this term and that term, I've just replaced gamma with beta, beta with gamma. Yeah?
Question about the original theorem. The theorem on the second point.
Right.
The additional condition would require the torsion to be zero.
No. The symmetric part of gamma is equal to this.
But the symmetric part you just had on the...
Good point. Good point. So now we need to ask... You're right. I haven't really proved that. The question is this... Yeah, sorry, I should have said that. Good point. Question is this symmetric or anti-symmetric?
I just meant on that board there, you had the symmetric part.
I do have the symmetric part. That is true.
And it's not equal to the theorem unless the second term is zero.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Yes, you're right. No, you're perfectly right. So how can I, what's the best way to put this? I believe it is actually true that the contortion is, yeah, no, you're right. For the moment, let me just leave it like that. And torsion is zero. That's certainly true. Okay. But there is a more general statement, which I'm trying to say. Let me think about it. But you're completely right. All I've shown is that if the torsion is zero, then the connection is the Christoffel symbol. There is a more general condition which I'm trying to remember, but I believe it's true that this contortion, if the contortion is totally anti-symmetric, there's some statement like this, then the connection is the Christoffel symbol. It's something like that. But let me not dwell on it now. Okay, so this is the general case, and let me just notice here that in fact, in the presence of fermion fields, the torsion is generally not zero. So for example, in supergravity, it's related to the spin density. So observationally, you can do experiments to measure torsion. And that's a very interesting thing to do. When you calculate the torsion in a theory like supergravity, where it is dynamically determined, it turns out to be suppressed by powers of the Planck mass, which is a big number, and so it's small for essentially for reasons of dimensions, but in general it didn't have to be. Okay, so I think I'm just going to do one other thing. Are there any other questions? Yeah.
Is the Christoffel symbol still defined as the symmetric part, right?
The Christoffel symbol is just this formula.
Oh. That's
the Christoffel symbol. That's the definition of the Christoffel symbol. Right, so I want to do, so recall the equivalence principle. An equivalence principle was basically Einstein's idea that physics in the presence of gravity looked just like special relativistic physics, where I took my eta mu nu in special relativity and replaced it with g mu nu. Okay, so that's the content of the equivalence principle, is that locally at a point in space-time, you can't really see the effect of gravity. Physics is just as it would have been without gravity. And so the statement was that g mu nu, we can choose coordinates in which g mu nu equals eta mu nu at any at a point P. And I just mentioned in passing that you can also pick the first derivative of the metric, pick coordinates in which the first derivative of the metric okay, so you can simultaneously choose coordinates in which the metric at one spacetime point is eta mu nu, and its first derivative is zero. So locally, it just looks like the Minkowski metric. Of course, if you do a Taylor series, there will be corrections proportional to the second derivative, which you cannot set equal to zero. So let me just prove that now. Well, actually, before we do that, notice what this implies is that if the first derivative of the metric is zero, then the Christoffel symbols are zero at that point. Okay? I.e., this alpha, beta, gamma equals zero at that point. So let's prove it. All we do, it's completely obvious, that g prime is dx dx prime dx dx prime times g. And I'm not going to put any indices in. I'll leave it to you to put them in. But also, we have that x, you see, this is g prime of x prime. What I want to show is that the first derivative of g in this primed coordinate system is zero. And so let's just calculate it. So I'll give you some g, could be anything. And what I'm going to do is use these, the freedom I have to define x as a function of x prime to zap the first derivatives. So we're used to thinking about x prime as a function of x, but equally well, we can think of x as a function of x prime. Okay, it's got to be an invertible, there's an invertible map from one coordinate system to the other. So I can just express x in terms of x prime. And let's talk about some point P whose coordinate x is equal to a, and x prime is equal to a prime. A and a prime are just some numbers. So what is x in terms of x prime? Let's just express x as a Taylor series around this point, around the value x prime equal to a prime. So it's a prime, the location of the point, plus dx prime, x prime minus a prime. This is evaluated at the point. plus d2x dx prime.
Right.
Oh, sorry. X is a function of x prime. Should probably be a. Yeah, no, that's right. Exactly. Sorry, that's right. I could think about it as. Yeah, that's right. It's x evaluated at a prime, which is, of course, a. This is x of a prime, right? Which is equal to a. And this is dx dx prime times x prime minus a prime. So I'm just doing a Taylor expansion of x around the point x prime equal to a prime. Okay, so now I have this thing, d2 dx prime dx prime times x prime minus a prime, x prime minus a prime. And in the Taylor expansion, there's a half. And if you want me to put indices in, I can put them in. So that would be alpha. That's an alpha. This is a mu, beta, gamma, beta, gamma. Plus dot dot dot. Okay. Sorry?
Is it A or A prime?
This one? No, this is A, because you see, when you do a Taylor expansion of a function, you're working out x mu. You're Taylor expanding around the point A prime, right? X prime equals A prime at this point. So you need to work out what is the value x of a prime. But x of a prime is just a mu. I mean, that's the value of the coordinate at the point P. Right? So the first term is just a. OK, so that is the Taylor series. So now I can compute my g prime. And again, I'll do it without indices. Dx prime dx squared g. Right? Remember the transformation law of the metric g prime mu nu is dx dx prime mu dx dx prime mu g alpha beta. So that's the first term. And so that's that's just the formula.
If you don't sit down, why do you have dx prime by dx?
Yeah. Oh, thanks. Yeah, I've got x as a function of x prime. That's the whole point. And so here's my g prime. Now, all I do is take these pieces and individually express them in a Taylor series in x prime minus a prime. And the objective is to adjust this x of x prime to cancel the first the linear term in the x prime minus a prime. So this is equal to dx dx prime at the point times g at the point. Yeah, I'll just write the whole thing at the point P. Just have to evaluate it at the point P, plus the Taylor expansion. So here I'll have dx dx prime, d2x dx prime, g plus dx dx prime, dx dx prime, d. Dg, d prime g, let's see. T- times x prime minus a prime. Isn't that right?
Question?
Yep.
When you wrote the g prime, you wrote dx by dx prime squared. But should be dx by dx prime dx by dx.
This one?
No, the first. The
first this one?
The very first one. No.
Yeah?
Yeah, this one.
Yep.
Why did you square it? It should be two terms, two different terms.
Yeah, I'm just being sketchy. Okay, I don't want to put all the indices in. I'm leaving it to you. Okay, so the idea here is that I just take these terms. I could do that here too if you want. Dx, dx prime. Okay, the point is just calculate this at the point P. And now do a Taylor series of this whole thing around the in x prime minus a prime. Okay? So what is dx dx prime? Well, first of all, if I take derivative of x with respect to x prime, and then I set x prime equal to a, I lose all these terms and I just get that coefficient. Okay? So that is where this came from. These are all evaluated at p. In this term, I need the term in x, which is quadratic in x prime minus a prime, because when I differentiate it, I'll get something linear, and that will contribute over here. Okay? So I'll just leave it to you to fill in all the indices. But what you can see, you see, what we want to arrange is that g prime of x prime at the point x prime equals a, so that means all of these terms are zero. It's just this term. And what we can do is choose dx dx prime to be the matrix which converts g into eta. And I actually did this last time, right? Because last time I showed you that with an appropriate choice of converting x to x prime, I could turn g into eta. You see, let's call that matrix, well, this is basically J twiddle, right? So what I've got here is that g prime at a prime is equal to J twiddle g at a. G is a symmetric matrix, so I can diagonalize this. I can write this as orthogonal times diagonal times orthogonal. And essentially, I can pick the J to cancel the O. I just say J is J twiddle is O to remove this term. And then I pick J to be this diagonal, if you remember, was minus L1, L0 squared plus L1 squared plus L2 squared plus L3 squared. We just pick the J, so I pick J to be O inverse times L inverse. So this is L eta L, and I just cancel off the L's. And so, just as I explained last time, this term I can pick to be eta. And all I need to do is to choose this quantity, which is a 4x4 matrix. Could be anything. I'm free to choose whatever it is. It defines x as a series in x prime. And so I can pick g to be eta. But I can actually do much better than that. You see, I would like to cancel these terms, too. I would like that g prime has no linear term in x prime minus a prime. Now, how am I going to do it? Well, this is a completely arbitrary set of numbers. right? When I define x as a series in x prime, it'll have some first derivative, which is arbitrary. It'll have some second derivative, which is arbitrary. So I can just pick those numbers to be whatever I like. And I pick them to be numbers which will cause that term to be zero. So one, we choose x dx prime, which are 16 numbers. Right, to such that g mu nu equals eta mu nu at p, g prime mu nu. So the metric is eta in the new coordinate system. Second thing is we choose the 2x, the x prime beta, the x prime gamma. These are all at the point P. How many numbers in there? So when I define x as a function of x prime, I can just put anything I like in there. It's just the coefficient of x prime minus a prime squared. How many numbers in that quantity? Sorry? Not quite 64, because it's symmetric. Okay? So symmetric two-component tensor has 10. Like the metric has 10 components, and 10 times 4, so it's 40. So there are 40 numbers. Okay? Such that the linear term, let's call that term 1, this is the linear term in x prime minus a prime equals 0, such that 1 equals 0. Okay, so I can adjust these to be whatever I like. This is already determined at the point. In fact, just to write it out, whoops. You see, I've written d prime of g, but this is actually d prime, d by dx prime of g means dx dx prime d by dx of g. So in the original coordinate system, I had some derivative of g. It wasn't 0. In the new coordinate system, I have these matrices. I've already fixed them, actually, by setting g to be eta. And so now I just want to use these up to cancel all of those coefficients. How many coefficients do I have to cancel? I use them to cancel these g, beta, gamma, comma, alpha. How many coefficients do I have to cancel? How many quantities are represented by these derivatives? How many numbers?
40.
Pardon?
40.
40, because also symmetric, and four of those, also 40 quantities. So I have exactly the right number of choices to make in defining my coordinate transformation, such that I can cancel all the first derivatives of the metric. Okay, so that's the statement of the equivalence principle. So then you can ask the question, can you cancel the second derivatives, g, alpha, beta, comma, gamma, delta? What about those? So those would come from the terms in this Taylor series involving x prime minus a prime squared. And can I get rid of all those? And the problem is, all you have to play with, the only free numbers at this order, are d3x by dx prime, dx prime, dx prime. Okay, so that's got a mu, that's alpha, beta, gamma. So if you work out all this junk, you're just going to get the same kind of thing as this, but with three derivatives. And you can adjust those numbers. Now, how many numbers there? So it's symmetric under these three, and then there are four of those. How many components in a symmetric tensor with three indices.
60.
Pardon?
The total 60.
The total is almost. That's four.
Yeah.
How many in a three index? If I give you something with three indices, and it's completely symmetric, how many indices? So, quick way to calculate this, and I look at the Wikipedia article on Young Tableau. Young Tableau show you all about the symmetric group of permutations. And basically, you draw a little diagram like this, if it's symmetric, and you say four, because there are four components in each index, and then five, and then six. And the formula for Young Tableau is 4 times 5 times 6. And then you do the hooks, 1, 2, 3. This went through one box, two boxes, three boxes, 1, 2, 3. So it's 4 times 5, which is 20. OK? I don't expect you to understand that. But what I'm telling you is that Young Tableau, look at the Wikipedia article, and it will tell you how to calculate the number of components of any tensor with any symmetry. Symmetric, anti-symmetric, whatever you like. It's very easy to read off the components. So this is actually 20 for these and 4 for those. So this is 80 quantities. How many here? How many numbers do I have to get rid of? Am I trying to get rid of?
160?
No. This has 10 components. A symmetric.
100.
10? 100. Exactly. So this is symmetric, so there's 10. And this is symmetric, so there are 10 of those. So this is 100. So can I do it? No. I only have 80 things to adjust to cancel 100 things. The remainder is 20. There are 20 second derivatives of the metric that cannot be canceled, okay? And so next week, we're going to study the Riemann tensor. And how many components do you think the Riemann tensor has?
20.
Okay, so the Riemann tensor encodes exactly the second derivative of the metric that cannot be set zero by a coordinate transformation. And all of gravity sits in here. Okay, so gravity is controlled by the second derivative metric, not the first. Okay, are there any questions? I think I went on way too long. So I'm not sure if you're getting a homework. I do apologize. I haven't had time to really construct one.
Maybe.
Maybe. You may get a homework. If you don't, you're lucky.